Ever wonder what happens to a partner's stake in an LLC when they pack up and leave? It's not always the clean break you might imagine.
Definitely not.
Welcome to the Deep Dive, where
Yeah.
we pull apart the legal knots that tie up the business world.
And today we're plunging into a really fascinating case from the Wyoming Supreme Court, Lieberman v. Wyoming.com, LLC.
Right, a case from 2004, but still incredibly relevant.
Absolutely. It's pretty much a cornerstone for understanding what happens to a member's ownership in an LLC, their equity, when they dissociate, leave voluntarily or otherwise. It highlights some crucial and often overlooked bits of LLC law.
Exactly. And our mission here really is to pull out the key lessons from Lieberman, especially for those of you heading into legal practice.
Yeah, folks will be drafting those all-important LLC operating agreements.
This case is just such a stark illustration of how failing to plan for a member's departure can lead to seriously messy and, expensive consequences down the line.
And the core of the dispute is quite revealing, isn't it? E. Michael Lieberman put in $20,000 for a 40% stake in Wyoming.com back in the mid-90s.
Okay.
Years later, when he left, he figured his share was worth around $400,000 based on the company's growth.
A significant jump.
But Wyoming.com, they basically just offered him his initial 20 grand back.
Oof, that's a difference. That just screams lawsuit.
Pretty much.
Okay, let's set the stage a bit. Wyoming.com LLC was founded, you said, 1994, Lieberman and the Moss Brooks.
That's right. And Lieberman's $20,000 got him that substantial 40% piece of the action.
Now, I gather more members joined later. Did that change his stake?
Well, more members did join, boosting the LLC's total capital, but the records indicate Lieberman's initial contribution and his 40% ownership percentage remained constant going into the dispute.
Got it. Then things went sour.
Yeah, February 1998, the relationship frayed and Lieberman was terminated from his VP role at Wyoming.com.
Okay.
Shortly after that, he formally withdrew as a member, and that's when the whole thing really caught fire.
Right, because Lieberman, quite understandably, thought he deserved the fair market value for his 40%.
He'd seen a valuation suggesting the company was doing pretty well, so
Yeah.
$400,000 seemed reasonable from his perspective.
But the remaining members of Wyoming.com, they saw it differently.
Very differently. They acknowledged his withdrawal, sure, and they intended to keep the business going without dissolving it.
But the payout.
Their offer was just to return the $20,000 he'd originally put in, nothing more.
You can see how that ends up in court.
Straight to the courtroom. Yep.
So this first disagreement lands in the trial court. What happened there?
Well, the first judge actually sided with Wyoming.com. They said, essentially, that Lieberman's leaving didn't dissolve the LLC, which wasn't really the main argument anyway,
Right.
and that he was only entitled to get his initial $20,000 back.
But that wasn't the final word.
Not by a long shot.
Yeah.
Lieberman appealed to the Wyoming Supreme Court. Now, the Supreme Court agreed with the lower court on one point. Lieberman's withdrawal alone didn't force the LLC to dissolve. But they weren't quite sold on the reasoning about his ownership stake, his equity. So they sent the case back down, remanded it for the district court to look closer at the status of his equity.
Okay, this first trip to the Supreme Court is often called Lieberman the One, right?
That's the one. Round one.
So back it goes to the district court. Second time around, did they sort it out?
Not in a way Lieberman liked. This time, the district court decided to tie Lieberman's equity interest directly to his capital account when he withdrew.
His capital account. How did that work?
Well, and here's a really crucial detail. His capital account was actually negative at the time.
Negative. How does that happen?
It can happen for various reasons. Maybe distributions over time exceeded his contributions, or perhaps losses were allocated to his account. The judgment doesn't spell out the exact reason for the negative balance,
Okay.
but based on this negative capital account, the court, again, denied him any payment beyond getting that initial $20,000 back.
Wow. A negative capital account being the justification. That certainly complicates things. So, no surprise, Lieberman wasn't happy with that result either.
Nope. Which led straight to a second appeal to the Wyoming Supreme Court. And this is where we get to the real heart of the legal issue, what people call Lieberman the Second.
And the central question became.
The core question was this: when a member withdraws or dissociates from an LLC, does that automatically just wipe out their equity interest? especially if the LLC's operating agreement doesn't spell out what happens.
That really is the key, isn't it? What happens to the ownership value?
Exactly. The Wyoming Supreme Court in the second round had to really wrestle with that. What happens to that ownership stake when someone leaves as a member, but the business itself keeps going?
And their decision.
Their ultimate ruling was that Lieberman did retain his equity interests, even though he was no longer technically a member.
Okay, that might sound a little counterintuitive to some.
Yeah.
How did they justify that? What was the reasoning?
Well, there were several big factors. First, and this is huge, the Wyoming LLC Act itself was silent. It didn't have specific rules saying what happens to a member's equity when they dissociate.
So the state law just didn't cover this specific situation.
Precisely. And that silence then points to the second critical piece, the LLC's own operating agreements.
The internal rulebook.
Exactly. Those agreements, the foundational documents, also failed to include any procedures for buying out or liquidating a departing member's equity. Zero clarity.
So a gap in the law and a gap in their own agreement.
A double gap. And that was absolutely pivotal. It really highlights a core principle. Courts generally won't rewrite agreements for parties.
Right. They work with what's there.
If you don't spell out things like buyout mechanisms, maybe a formula based on revenue or using an independent appraisal or even a right of first refusal, you're leaving things wide open. You have to think ahead about these exit scenarios.
So with no clear rules in the statute or the agreement, what else did the court look at?
They really focused on the difference between a member's economic rights and their non-economic rights.
Okay, break that down for us.
Sure. Lieberman's withdrawal definitely ended his non-economic rights. That's stuff like voting, participating in management, you know, the active member roles. He wasn't a member in that sense anymore.
Got it. The day-to-day control and input.
Right. But the court said that ending those rights didn't automatically extinguish his economic rights, his financial stake.
Meaning his claim on future profits or the company's value?
Precisely. His right to receive distributions if profits are paid out or his share of assets if the company eventually dissolves. He was still an owner, just an owner without the management powers.
That makes a certain kind of sense. He put money in, helped build value.
It seems unfair for that value to just vanish because he left his active role, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
And the court was very clear. They weren't going to step in and create some kind of mandatory buyout requirement that the members hadn't agreed on themselves in the first place.
They wouldn't impose terms.
They basically said, look, you didn't agree to this in your contract, so we can't force it now.
Hmm. But doesn't that leave the departing member, like Lieberman, in a bit of a limbo? He owns something, but can't really access its value.
That's a very, very good point, and it leads into the dissent. But first, what about that negative capital account the lower court used?
Right. The Supreme Court didn't buy that argument, did they?
No, they flatly rejected it as the sole basis for deciding the value or existence of his stake. They pointed out again that the operating agreements never said the capital account would be used that way for a buyout upon withdrawal.
So using it was inappropriate because it wasn't agreed upon.
Exactly. It all comes back to the agreement or the lack thereof.
It really sounds like this entire mess stemmed from those missing clauses in the operating agreement.
Fundamentally, yes. The court was just really hesitant to read things into the agreement that weren't actually written down.
Now, you mentioned a dissent. Not everyone on the court agreed.
Correct. Justice Lehman wrote a dissent, and it raises some really important counterarguments.
What was the dissenting view?
Justice Lehman was worried about the potential for oppression. He basically argued that this ruling could allow the remaining members to effectively freeze out a former member who still holds equity.
How so?
Well, imagine Lieberman technically owning 40%, but having zero influence and maybe no way to ever get his money out unless the others decide to sell the whole company or dissolve it, right?
Yeah, he's stuck.
Exactly. The dissent suggested that maybe in situations like this where the agreement is silent, there should be a default rule. Perhaps something like using the dissolution valuation method, basically fair market value at the time of withdrawal as a fallback.
To provide some fairness or baseline.
You provide some kind of baseline protection, yeah. You can just picture the ongoing frustration and, frankly, the legal fees continuing to mount for everyone because this wasn't sorted out from the start. It's the kind of thing that keeps lawyers busy, maybe, but it's not great for the clients involved.
A really powerful point from the dissent about that potential imbalance. Okay, so pulling this all together, this case offers some massive lessons for aspiring lawyers, especially anyone thinking about business law or drafting LLC documents.
Oh, absolutely. Lesson number one, highlighted in neon letters, is the critical, paramount importance of a well-drafted operating agreement.
You really can't overstate that.
You really can't. This case just screams that you need clear, comprehensive terms for what happens when a member dissociates, leaves for any reason. You need specific clauses on buyouts, how to value the interest.
The works.
So it's not just about who owns what percentage at the start. It's about the end game, too.
Absolutely. Think through the whole life cycle. Voluntary withdrawal, involuntary expulsion, death, bankruptcy, what happens to the equity in each case. Which brings us to the second lesson, really understanding that distinction between equity and membership.
Ownership versus control. Precisely. The court made it clear they're separate. Owning a piece of the financial pie isn't the same as having voting rights or management power. Your operating agreement needs to address both distinctly.
And what about those capital accounts? They seemed so important to the lower court.
Right. Lesson three. Capital accounts track contributions and distributions. Sure, they're important for accounting and tax. But Lieberman shows they aren't automatically the measure for a buyout value unless your agreement explicitly says they are. Don't assume a court will default to that.
Okay. Good warning.
And finally, take that dissent seriously. Lesson four. Consider the risk of oppression.
Justice Lehman's point.
Yeah. When you're drafting, think about protecting the departing member, too. Can the remaining members unfairly disadvantage someone who still holds equity but has no control? Well-defined, fair buyout mechanisms help prevent that.
So, for all you law students listening, when you get that first LLC formation pass, ask yourself, have I really thought through what happens if someone walks away? Because Lieberman shows exactly why you absolutely must.
Failure to do that, it just opens the door to long, costly legal fights, and the outcome is anything but certain.
So we've walked through Lieberman's long journey, the court's reasoning. Now let's just crystallize what this means moving forward for legal practice.
I think the clearest message is that in LLC law, particularly around member departures, that carefully crafted operating agreement is your best defense. It's your shield.
Ambiguity is the enemy.
Totally. Ambiguity, or just silence on key issues, leads straight to litigation and unpredictable results nobody wanted.
So as you, our listeners, get deeper into business structures and contract drafting, keep this LiebermanVWyoming.com story in your back pocket. Remember how reluctant courts can be to add terms that aren't already there.
It really forces the question, doesn't it?
It does. How will you draft these agreements to protect your clients and anticipate those messy future possibilities?
It's just a fascinating look under the hood of what seems like a simple structure, but clearly isn't always.
Definitely encourages a deeper dive into LLC law, and maybe just as importantly, the art of really solid contract drafting.